Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to the Board of Health. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Is there a motion for the minutes of May 23rd, 2018?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion carried. Any comments from the public? Seeing none, public health in action.
Good morning, counselors.
Good morning.
For the record, Dr. Alan Melnick, public health director. It's not on the agenda, but it's hot off the press. I figured I'd give you some stats from the Recycled Arts Festival. Tell you. Hopefully you all had a chance. So I'm reading it off my phone. I apologize because I just got it. But we had between 35 and 40,000 attendees.
Yeah.
126 volunteers with 412 volunteer hours, which translates into, I'm not sure how the calculation is done, at $10,172 value. We had 10 of our staff there, including two temps and three AmeriCorps folks, 133 vendors, recycled art vendors, with a $10,500 revenue there, seven sponsors, and I think I'm going to try to read these to you quickly. McCord's Vancouver Toyota, BioClean, Northwest Natural, Renewal by Anderson, Leaf Filter, Waste Connections, and the City of Vancouver. There are 11, in terms of nonprofits, there are 11 education and nonprofit folks there. Surveys of the attendees, because we try to get evaluate and get some data on that, 30% of people who filled out the survey were returning. 16% came based on word of mouth. 48%, and this is great in terms of the whole purpose of this, reported positive change in education and waste matter. So, I mean, part of this is to educate people about recycling so we reduce the waste stream. So 48% reported positive change at the survey done at the festival itself, and 35% on the online survey reported a positive change in their behaviors on that. And the vendors were very satisfied, 100% satisfaction reported by the vendors. 37 participants in the Procession of the Species. This is the second annual one, so we had 37 participants. That was a 250% increase over last year. So that seems, I'll try and make a bad pun, like it's getting more legs. We had some new this year. We had the Falconer, which was wildlife education with live birds of prey. We had the tiny house display, the repair cafe. They had a table and free demonstrations. And the Recycled Arts Festival Vancouver Rocks promotion were all new. So that's just basic little summary. So it continues to be really successful. And for me, what's most gratifying is that it really, people reporting that they're learning something from this and they're learning about recycling and reducing the waste stream.
That's great.
So I went on Sunday intending to spend about an hour. You know how we allocate time? And I spent a full 2 hours. And that was at 10 o'clock in the morning. The only place I could find to park was up here by the courthouse. That's how many people came. It was absolutely phenomenal. It's the biggest turnout I've ever seen for the Recycle Arts Festival.
It seems like it's growing every year because last year I think we had about 30,000, so if I remember correctly. So, right. Okay, on to the agenda. For Public Health in Action, since the summer is we're going to be talking about how we work around swim beach safety, and we have two presenters here, Alyssa Payne, who's an environmental health specialist, and Logan Dearborn, who's an environmental health intern. He's with the University of Washington, and he's interning with us.
Go Huskies.
I'm a Husky.
I'm a Coug, so we can't be friends.
Don't worry, it's his last day.
Okay. Good morning, counselors. My name is Melissa Payne, and I'm an environmental health specialist at Clark County Public Health, helping oversee our seasonal swim beach program. With me is Logan Dearborn, our summer swim beach intern, and this morning we are going to be talking about our swim beach program. Hmm. In public health, we seek to protect the public of residents and visitors by ensuring a safe and healthy environment. We do this in many ways, such as food safety inspections, ensuring safe school facilities, and also overseeing the design and construction of septic systems, to name a few. In the swim beach program, we protect the public from the risk of disease that can occur while swimming in natural bodies of water. Logan is now going to be talking about where and what we sample for.
We sample at the three designated swim beaches here in Clark County, and those are Vancouver Lake, Klein Line Pond, and Battleground Lake. We routinely sample for E. coli every other week between Labor Day and Memorial Day weekend. We sample for cyanotoxins whenever a cyanobacteria bloom is occurring at any natural body of water within the county. We will sample other surface waters as needed based on complaints or reports of an ongoing cyanobacteria bloom. Now Alyssa will give more details about sampling for cyanobacteria.
As Logan mentioned, we do sample for cyanotoxins when we do have a bloom. Cyanobacteria, or more commonly referred to as blue-green algae, are single-celled bacteria naturally present in all bodies of water. They can bloom and become visible, posing a health threat, as they can produce toxins in this state when conditions are favorable. We sample for anatoxin A and microcystin. Microcystin is a hepatotoxin affecting your liver, and anatoxin A is a neurotoxin. To be affected by these toxins, you would have to ingest water where the bloom is occurring. So when we do have a bloom and we want to alert the public at the swim beach, we'll post one of these three signs. If we have a bloom but we don't have confirmation that toxins are present, we'll post the swim beach at caution. If a bloom is occurring and toxins are present, we will post the lake at warning. But if we have results that toxins are high enough to pose a serious health threat, we will close the swim beach. I will now hand it off to Logan to talk about our E. coli monitoring.
Quick question. Is this similar to what was happening at Detroit Lake?
Yeah,
it's basically cyanobacteria and toxins, and, yeah, the concern was getting into the drinking water. It's exactly the same thing. And we've experienced blooms here, Vancouver Lake. I think we've had Lacamas Lake as well.
So as soon as we get the test, this is kind of the Salem thing, that since there was a delay, as soon as you get the test results, do you act on one of these?
Yes. So as soon as we see a bloom forming, we'll immediately post the lake at caution, okay, and we'll update our website. And then in years past, we haven't had a toxic bloom. So we've had blooms, but there hasn't been the toxins that we are most concerned about. So then we'll leave the lake at caution, but then we'll keep resampling because the conditions of the bloom do change.
Okay. As has been previously stated, we do biweekly sampling for E. coli at Klein Line Pond, Vancouver Lake, and Battleground Lake. Using the EPA's beach program, we have adopted their beach action value of 235 colony-forming units per 100 milliliters of water to our swim beaches to ensure that they are safe to swim in. If one or more samples exceed this value, the beach will be closed and resampled until bacterial levels fall below this value again. Alyssa will now talk about how we keep the public informed whenever there is a beach closure.
Okay. As mentioned, when needed, we will post signs at the affected swim beach to alert the public. We will also post this information on our website, along with postings to social media, such as our Facebook and Twitter account. We will also work with our public information officer to issue press releases when needed. We also educate the public by providing a video on our website about safe swimming, and every year we issue a press release talking about swimming in cold water, and we also provide safe swimming tips. We now also link to Public Works' webpage on our website, and we describing how homeowners can improve our local swim beach's water quality by being mindful about what they dump down their storm drain. We'll now be showing you our...
Excuse me. So Battleground State Park, since it's a state park, do we work with the state to let them put on their website, I would think? Or...
Yes, we do work with park staff to alert them of an issue.
Okay.
We've only been sampling... We were sampling Battleground Lake many years ago before I started, so I don't know those exact dates. And so we only started resampling there this last year.
Oh, okay.
So far, no issues. So we haven't had to worry about that yet.
Okay.
So I have another question also sort of about that. So when we talk about the greater good with regard to public health and this sampling program, how is that funded and where do the resources come from? Because we do have county parks plus the state park. So does that fit? And I assume you're not charging fees for this. So this is
correct.
Part of the greater good.
I'm going to have Joel Laxon as our program manager with recreational water, among other things, explain that.
Yeah, so we charge fees for public pools and spas permitting, and the swim beach program falls underneath that greater good. So it kind of falls underneath the water recreation program because that's how that's funded.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, I just want to mention really briefly around cyanobacteria. Skin contact can cause irritation and skin symptoms as well. So even skin contact is not a good – I just want to make sure I got that out there as well.
Okay. Sorry, I lost my place. So we'll now be showing you guys our Swim Safely This Summer video that we made last year. This shows how we work with our community partners to ensure safe swimming.
Today we're going to talk to you about swim safety.
Well, one of the most important things that parents need to know is to practice active supervision anytime their children are in or near the water. That means keeping your eyes on them. Because drowning can happen quickly and silently, the second most important thing would be to always make sure your kids wear a U.S. Coast Guard certified life jacket. It's also important to educate your children about water safety. So you should teach them to swim. They should at least know how to float and tread water and how to get to the side of the pool or the pond safely.
Climb Life Pond offers a life jacket honor station. When you choose a life jacket, make sure it fits correctly and zip all zippers and buckle all buckles. It should fit nice and snug. When you're finished, please remember to return your life jacket for other people to use.
Public health also monitors other risks within the natural body waters within Clark County. Some of those risks can be becoming related to bacteria within the water.
Today, we're here at Klein Line Pond, and I'm going to test the water quality. Testing the water quality is important for everybody's health and safety. Today, we sample for E. coli. It's really important to sample for this bacteria because it can be very harmful for you and your family.
If there is a problem with E. coli bacteria levels within the lake, public health will typically post signs at the swim beach and also put warnings on our website.
From all of us at Clark County Public Health, we hope you have a safe and fun summer.
Swimming, wading, and playing in the water are great ways to cool off on hot summer days. So practice water safety this swimming season. For more information on swimming and water safety, please visit the county's website at www.clark.wa.gov/public-works/swimming.
Thank you. Do you guys have any other questions?
I just have a question about how exactly the signs are posted, if there's more than one, if it's at the entrance or near the beach.
So we do have, so the most common example that comes to mind is Vancouver Lake, and we'll have a bloom. So what we'll do is we'll coordinate with Clark County Park staff, and they should have a reserve of signs that they'll be able to post. And they also will print off flyers because they do have people at that fee booth station, and they'll basically print off a flyer of that sign and hand it to people as they come in.
Okay.
So we'll have signs basically at the parking area on those posts, and then they'll also be handed a flyer when they enter the park.
Okay. What about, are there parks where there isn't somebody at a gate to hand a flyer?
Yes, we haven't had issues at those parks in recent years.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
good.
But if we did, we would coordinate with Clark County Parks or State Parks to have them go out and post those signs for
great.
Us.
Thank you.
Do we do any kind of education for E. coli about what people can do to try and prevent those contaminations and making sure kids are taking bathroom breaks and wearing swim diapers. Do we preventative education?
We do preventative education in our water recreation program. I don't know if we have that specific education at our swim beach. You would hope it would be common sense.
You would hope.
But more often than not, the source of contamination of E. coli is not really someone, it's not always someone like going to the bathroom in the lake. It's contamination from the streams that feed into the lake. That's the most common cause of kind of a widespread contamination. So that's why we link to Public Works webpage talking about clean water.
But, you know, E. coli is an indicator organism for potential fecal contamination. A few years ago, you might recall, we had a Shigella outbreak. Yeah, I believe it was Kleinlein Pond.
I think that was Louisville.
That was Kleinlein.
Oh, okay.
We may have had another one, but it was, and there is an association between, you know, we did some education around that because people had their toddlers with diapers in the, actually in the pond. And with these shallow ponds, there's not great circulation. It doesn't take many organisms in terms of Shigella to cause a problem. So we do a lot of education around that, and we continue to, but that's more example of dealing with the greater good. I figured I'd bring that up as well.
I know we've talked about this, but on private pools, do we do the testing or do we rely on the data from the people who, like Alderbrook and places like that?
So places like that are going to be permitted water recreation facilities.
Right.
And when you're a permitted water recreation facility, you're required to have a disinfection method for that water. And so that's what our inspectors do when they go out, is they check basically your disinfection system, and they also check the water quality to make sure that you're disinfecting properly.
Okay, thank you very much. Great.
Thank you.
Welcome. Yes.
Director's report. Okay. The board of health, had asked us to talk about how we work with Public Works on environmental issues a while back. So that's what we have for you today. We have we're delighted to have Dean Benning, Clean Water Division Manager from Public Works, Chuck Harmon, who's one of our environmental public health managers, and Joe Laxon, who's another, just heard from a few minutes ago, environmental public health manager. And they're going to talk about how we coordinate with Public Works, how Public Health and Public Works coordinate on environmental health issues.
Good morning, councilors. Chuck Harmon. I'm a program manager at Environmental Public Health and oversee on-site septic, solid waste enforcement, hazardous assessment, and source control programs, and drinking water protection. And I think I'll let everyone introduce, and then I'm going to start the presentation off.
Dean Benning, Clean Water Division Manager with Public Works.
And Joe Laxon, Program Manager over Water Recreation, Food Safety, and School Health and Safety.
So good morning, councilors. I'd like to all start us off by talking a little bit and doing a brief summary of some of our environmental programs and services. As an overview, I know you're aware of a lot of these programs. And then I'll turn the presentation over to Dean and Joe, who will talk specifically about some areas and work that we do where we coordinate our responsibilities as Public Works and Public Health. At the end, or before we leave today, we also have put together a table that summarizes a lot of environmental services and programs and who's kind of the lead and who coordinates and also talks to other agencies that we work with, both Public Works and Public Health, so as a reference for the council members.
Right.
I'd like to start by talking about, and again, the programs that you're well aware of are solid waste programs. We oversee operations, planning, and outreach work for solid waste and recycling. That's a program. Those programs are overseen by Travis Dutton, who I know you've spoken to before as a program manager in those areas. I oversee the work that we do in solid waste enforcement, which is permitted facilities, complaints, and inspections. That also includes we oversee closed landfills that exist in the county, Leichner, Circle C, Hallstrom, because those are on post-closure permits. The other area that we do get involved is air quality. And first, again, you know, the Southwest Clean Air Agency is the lead for air quality permitting and burning oversight in the county and other counties in the region. But public health, we do, through our solid waste person, we also end up responding to indoor and outdoor air complaints. A lot of those will come our way. The things on indoor, and we've talked about those, I think, with you before, of like mold, lead, paint, things like that that will come our way. But also we'll get things about people burning or odor issues around solid waste that's been disposed, et cetera. Any of those complaints that dovetail into responsibilities of the Southwest Clean Air Agency, we will coordinate with them and turn those cases over to them and coordinate with them where we need to. In addition, under air quality, public health will respond when we get complaints for smoking in public places. Finally, the other program I was going to summarize, or one of the other programs, was our on-site septic systems program.
How do you deal with smoking in public places?
Well, there is a local ordinance governing smoking in public places, how far you need to be from the door. But
you like call Alan, he goes and yells at him or something. Or?
Yeah, we send Alan out. He's pretty effective. it's basically complaint driven. We do have some staff. We don't get a lot of those complaints, to my knowledge. But I think sometimes food safety folks will follow up on those. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, there's oftentimes we'll see observe smoking happening near a restaurant, that type of thing. So we work with our chronic disease program, and they actually will send letters, warning letters and education letters to those businesses at this time.
And I believe it's a state smoking indoor public places law. It's a state law, not a local ordinance. We have the local vaping ordinance that we passed, but
yeah.
That the board passed, but.
I
can't recall that we have fined anybody or anything like that. Usually the letters, it hasn't come up that much. People are generally compliant. Usually letters take care of the issue.
Okay. So the one of public health's big water quality programs or water quality protection programs is our on-site septic systems program. You know, we oversee the permitting and also have a program to oversee operation and maintenance of those systems. And we also respond to complaints that are related to septic systems, and also when there are sewer system releases, we also respond just to coordinate with those departments or those agencies to make sure that if there are public health threats that they're being addressed appropriately, things again like signage, and we'll sometimes even coordinate with the rec water folks to help get the word out. And again, there are cases, and we are, and I think Dean will talk a little bit to it later, where we're working more closely now with Public Works in regards to their, and we have done this in the past, the stormwater team, where we have situations where stormwater or surface waters may be impacted. And so, again, we coordinate with them on data collection and verifying facts, things like that. Finally, I'll touch briefly on another one of our programs. This is funded from a grant from Ecology Local Source Control, and I mentioned this program because there's a grant from Ecology that both Public Health has and Public Works. Public Health, these covers the incorporated areas and Public Works, and we coordinate our programs and cross-train our teams on that. And this is technical assistance work with small businesses that are small quantity generators, and where the folks, the team, the individuals go out and look at how they're managing hazardous waste, talking about how they're disposing of it, and also focusing on where might waste be stored that could impact stormwater and surface waters. And so that's been a really good success. I think we've been doing that for about two and a half years. Yeah. So I thank you for your time. I'm going to turn the rest of the presentation over to Dean and Joe, but I'll stay to answer if some questions come up.
Great. So next, I want to build on Alyssa and Logan's great presentation about our Water Rec Spin Beach program. And we wanted to get a little bit more specific as far as how Dean's programs and some of our programs work together, specific to Vancouver Lake. Vancouver Lake, as we know, represents a really important community asset to everyone. And we have a shared stewardship responsibility for making sure Vancouver Lake is safe. One way that we do that is Dean's programs, the clean water staff, they monitor surface water and stormwater throughout the county. That includes streams that discharge into Vancouver Lake or Lake River. And as those waters move from those drainage areas into the lake, they can carry nutrients and bacteria that can potentially negatively impact the water quality and serve as a potential health risk. For the next slide, Dean's going to talk a little bit about some of those locations where his teams are sampling and what they're sampling for.
Yeah, so on this graphic, we've got six locations. These aren't ongoing stream sampling sites. Let me qualify it that way. We've sampled here historically, but these aren't part of our long-term monitoring sites, suite of sites. But these are the locations, both surface water and, of course, with two stormwater locations that drain to the lake and or lake river. So these are all of the locations we have data for. And, of course, that data is shared with the health department. And so if there's any issue that comes up, we can communicate on how that data might have caused whatever it is we're seeing.
What are you sampling for in particular?
At these sites, this is nutrients and bacteria, because that was obviously, those are key contaminants of concern in the lake. And I will note, too, that the two stormwater sites, those are mandated in our permit. Ecology is requiring that we sample those. We're hoping that data has not changed for some time, but we're hoping that that goes away in the next permit. Fingers crossed.
And do you send that to an outside lab?
Do you
send your samples to an outside lab? And you guys test your own, or do you send
No, we send it to a lab as well. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when we test, I heard it's getting cheaper to do the DNA between human and animal.
Yes, we're in fact going to be getting to that a little bit later in the slideshow. But yeah, cheaper's in quotes, I would say.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
So if through this testing, significant results are discovered, what is the process for communication on that?
Well, just letting Joe know over at the health department, if we see any spikes, honestly, we have not seen any of these surface water locations. We've not seen any bacteria levels over the 200, kind of cut off. So
sometimes Vancouver Lake, because it's broad and shallow, has a tendency to get unpleasant certain times of the year. How do we relate? We're testing, but how can we verify that the testing is telling us what potentially is going into the lake?
Well, I think
how do we have a nexus on preventing it in the future and
preventing the high levels, or just I think with Vancouver Lake and any one of these water bodies, it's a pretty dynamic environment.
Right.
So these streams are one potential source, right, of bacteria and nutrients. So we have large populations of geese that like to frequent at Vancouver Lake, right? Pets, people. There's a lot influencing specifically Vancouver Lake and, frankly, any water body. So I think between Dean and I, if Dean's team finds that there's high bacteria levels or nutrient loading at these locations, they let us know so that we're already doing routine sampling, so we kind of already know the picture of what's happening as far as the public health risk, right? That's our piece. Okay. But if they see high levels, we could potentially go out and do additional sampling where people might be accessing that water. The other piece of that, which I think has been alluded, you might be talking about a little bit later, but and Chuck alluded to it, is if we're seeing high nutrient loading or bacteria levels in those sites, that could be a sign of septic system infiltration. At these sites, probably not, because it's pretty industrial or sewer service. But we can do some source ID at that point and try to figure out what the origin might be. And actually, we have a brief example on how we partnered just a couple weeks ago on a specific issue like that.
That was the issue I was getting to.
No. Great. Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a second. So was that all you were going to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Just as we shared, we have that communication link. That way we can make sure that human impacts to potential contaminations are mitigated. Specifically, as Logan and Alyssa spoke, we routinely monitor Vancouver Lake. We routinely monitor at the swim beach because that's primarily where most of the swimming and potential ingestion of water is going to occur at the lake. There's a lot of other activities happening on the lake, and obviously, but this is the primary location. So we, every 2 weeks, as they said, we monitor these five sites along the swim beach, and we would take any action as they noted. If we see high counts, we would post warnings depending on what it might be, and then resample until the risk is gone, and then do that education outreach. I think one other thing about education or outreach, which was an earlier question, we do media releases as well. So you'll see those either on the radio or on the newspaper and that type of thing, us letting the public know, hey, there's an issue here, and now it's reopened. So, and Dr. Melnick's name is out there, so our expert.
Yeah, we've done this in the past. We have high levels. We'll post signs. We won't allow water contact, and we'll actually increase the frequency of testing, especially if we're looking at, holidays coming up and we know that people want to get into the lake, but the weather's really warm and we're still concerned. We'll step up our sampling. We've done that many times before.
Yeah, and we'll get questions from event coordinators, triathlons, regattas, and all that. So they'll often contact us just to find out what the water quality is looking like. So, on the next slide, another way that we partner is with Dean Shop is with the Parks Department. We actually have an official memorandum of understanding with them around swim beach monitoring. Mm-hmm. Sampling costs money, staff time costs money. This is really unfunded work, so it's been a really great opportunity for us to work together to kind of cover the whole effort. So on the left, public health, the memorandum of understanding basically outlines that we will have an intern this year, Logan. We're lucky to have Logan here to collect samples, deliver those to the lab, and collect those analyses from the lab and then help us take steps based on those results. And then if there's an issue, Logan, it's kind of that first step to notify everyone in the shop that we need to take additional action. And then we work together with Dr. Melnick to form the public health messages, because while it's often the same bacteria, the pathogen might be a little different. The weather, people might not be out because it might be cold, but so we take kind of a tailored approach each time we have an exceedance with the bacteria. And then with Parks, they've been an amazing partner in that they, as Alyssa alluded, they store the signs out at the parks, and they have staff out there every day, so we can contact them. If there's a problem, they can get the signs up really quick. Parks has agreed to pay for the routine sampling every 2 weeks. While for us, if we see a problem and we go into investigative mode and we need to take additional samples, public health will pay for those costs. As I mentioned, they assist in posting the signs, and then they every day they're out there making sure the beaches are clean and enjoyable for everyone to visit. And then a very specific example of how we partnered recently on the next slide is on June 19th, we actually received a citizen inquiry. And they suspected that there was raw sewage in Klein Line Pond due to some odors that they were getting from their clothes. And so we take that pretty seriously because raw sewage can be a significant health threat. So our team, Alyssa and Logan, conducted a site visit immediately and went out to see what was going on. They looked at the water, assessed the water quality. And at that moment, I contacted Dean and just asked, hey, has your water quality monitoring indicated any problems? And then also if he had a contact with the local sewering agency to see if there might have been an overflow in the sewer or something like that, that might have been a real kind of a very short kind of discharge that might have impacted the water quality. Dean was able to contact them. They got back saying, no, we haven't had any issues, and we didn't see any water quality problems. And then based on the assessment by our team, not really seeing any issues out there, we were able to get back to the concerned citizen, I think it was within 24 hours, just to let them know, hey, we're not seeing anything, make sure they weren't exhibiting any illness and that type of thing. Luckily, they weren't. It was just really, they smelt an odor on their clothes when they got back to their house. So so it was kind of a really great opportunity just to test that linkage and that communication. And it was, everyone was on par, and we were able to get back to the concerned citizen relatively quickly. So
I thought that worked especially well because, you know, this is really the first time we've dealt with wastewater. As you all know, wastewater and stormwater is clean water.
Yeah.
And so I was able to leverage our close partnership with Clark Regional there, and John Peterson got his team out there. And so it just worked really well, and it was the first time, I think, that wastewater was involved versus stormwater. So.
So it's good to see the system work in those really tight turnaround times. So that's what I wanted to share, and Dean's going to go on to talk about another opportunity where we partner together.
Okay, Councillor Bolt, to get to your topic you mentioned earlier, something I mentioned to the board a while back is that we were looking at on Whipple Creek, that's really going to be our next sort of focus and the next permit. And our next watershed that is of interest. And this year, we've been paying attention to sort of the microbiological world and the evolution in that world toward a technology called PCR, which is short for polymerase chain reaction. And this is a technology that's been out for a while, but it's gotten more and more precise and a little less expensive over time. And so we decided to take a fresh look at this technology and applying it here in the field work that we do to see if it wouldn't yield a good return on investment in terms of information. And this was just a natural connection between us and the health department. And so Clean Water, we brought them in early and told them what our plans were. And so we've had several meetings since to talk through this. So we're sort of joined at the hip on this project, although it hasn't started. We're still in planning, and we're planning, looking at different sampling locations that would be the most strategic and yield the most information. But it's going to be a four-phase project, as you see, and basically identifying is fecal coliform present. In phase two, we're going to be getting at the source, so that really involves collecting the samples, sending them to a laboratory, and asking them to identify what animal that fecal coliform has come from. And so then you get into, we can identify, you have to specify, we're interested in human sources. In our case, because we don't have any information yet, we're really going to throw the net out wider, and we're going to request they identify whether it's human sources, probably cow or horse, because along Whipple there's plenty of farmland.
Good.
And dog. So right now we've got a lot of our outreach, both at Public Health and Public Works, a lot of our outreach is focused on pet waste. And that's a great program, and it's often very applicable, but do we really know if it's dogs in Whipple Creek, for instance? And here we're going to find out. And we'll have a very precise measure of that.
Do you look at fowl there as well, like geese? And
yes, we can certainly do that. And that'll probably come to you later with that, because the costs go up significantly for every source you'd like to identify. So, for instance, for those four, horse, cow, dog, and human, if that's our request to the laboratory, each sample is about $900. And if we add a fifth, it goes up about $200.
They're making money.
But I think the initial surge on this research, the initial sampling event, will yield a lot of information that will help kind of narrow it down and help us focus a bit better. So,
but I would think, kind of on your point, I'm not too sure how we prioritize this, but depending on the flight and flight ways and the weather of the week, you can have 10,000 geese on a field right next to a creek, And that's, you know, that's it's roughly a, about a pound of waste per goose. So that's a lot.
Yeah, so there's a lot of criteria like that we're considering on, you know, we want to be really strategic and smart and logical about where we sample from. And in addition to how we can sample safely along the creek, we've got locations now that we sample from, but those may not necessarily be right for this. And so our field team is working on that now and providing us that information. In one case, if we find in an area of kind of mid-Whipple Creek there where there's about 5,000 parcels, and I mentioned this later, about one in five homeowners there, yeah, we can move on. Yeah, so fecal coliforms, of course, one of three contaminants of concern, the other two being copper and zinc for us in the Clean Water Division. And bullet two, what I'd mentioned, 5,000 tax lots in the watershed, Whipple Creek watershed, and 1,000 of those have septic systems. So depending on the condition of those septic systems, we could very well see, you know, that influencing the bacteria in the creek. So this is what that would call out. And so if we do find human sources, that's obviously something of great interest to the health department, and then they can take it and move on from there. And we would, of course, continue to sample ongoing to monitor for improvements.
I would presume also that the sources that you're checking for, which would be horses, cows, dogs, human, I'm assuming that you're starting with those because those are something we could actually do something about if we found it. Some kind of action could be taken because those are domesticated animals. And then if it's sewer or whatever as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And for instance, I didn't mention beaver. If it's beaver, what?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
If it's geese, what are you going to do? I mean.
So if we found nothing of any of those four sources, we can assume it's some other wild
some
animal
other,
that
yeah.
really can't manage anything.
Catter from deer.
Outreach is not going to help.
Yeah.
But that does get to my third bullet. And, you know, I mentioned the pet waste program that the health department runs, and it's a great program. But this will help us more precisely identify sources, and therefore we can, both us and Public Works and the health department, can tweak their outreach accordingly. This is a great opportunity for us to reengage with the conservation district if we find it's, you know, livestock,
yeah.
and get them out door to door because that's what they do. And so I can see some real opportunities for some good things happening here and for everybody to really have kind of more data behind what it is that they do.
I just want to make a quick mention.
Yeah.
And we've already been talking, and I've already got the folks in our operation and maintenance program for on-site of, you know, we've been working and we've made really good progress on folks that aren't staying up to date with their inspections. And so this is another opportunity using the data that exists and this additional data to really focus those efforts and really hone down on, okay, in certain areas, if we had an indicator of human, we could then really turn and work directly through our sort of compliance work also to contact homeowners in those areas that may not be in compliance with inspections. So that's another example of an action that we could use the data to focus our efforts.
Very good.
Okay, this is, I know, a little small, but this is the Whipple Creek watershed. So the red line, hopefully you can see that, is the border of the watershed. And these are just sort of some points of interest I wanted to bring to your attention. There are 5 locations here that had high fecal counts. And this is not an average of a lot of sampling or anything, but these were sort of episodic outings that we made. And you'll recognize off to your right, lower right, just downstream, like southwest of the amphitheater at the fairgrounds, got 2,800 colony-forming units. Just across I-5 to the northeast, we had 2,000. And as you move up in Whipple Creek, kind of moves from right to left on your map and discharges into Lake River. So I'm kind of moving downstream. The equestrian parcel there at the park, 2200, and as we sort of move away from the park, we're getting into more of a semi-rural area with development to the south and more rural land to the north. We saw 3,000. And then further north, the very end there, 2,000 CFUs, and that was just agricultural land. So different areas, different land use areas. There's not really any sense to be made of this because there's not enough data to really say much here, but at least it's these are high levels that were of interest, and you know, it might be that we go for our sampling regimen, picking logical spots that are semi-rural, rural. You know, at the fairgrounds, this could have been. I couldn't even tell you the time of year this was collected, but this could have been, you know, runoff from horse barn or, you know, who knows. But we're hoping to find out soon.
So that was one of my questions, is were all these taken at a similar period in time or over an X period of time?
Yeah, these were taken over about an 18-month period.
Okay, so that's quite a bit. That's quite a long period of time.
Yeah. But it just to kind of show you where the Whipple Creek watershed is and some of the area options we have for sample locations.
So standing water, it's pretty easy, but when you have flowing water, how do you know, I guess, like your point is, you almost have to have a point in time where everything is taken at the same time? I don't know. Either that or you don't know where it's coming from. You know?
Yeah, you have to qualify your data fairly. And I will say before I kind of went from we're sampling and then we're going to PCR, there is a step in there that we ourselves are going to be performing. It's called an optical brighteners test. And what that measures is basically a lot of the household products you use, like laundry detergent, have optical brighteners in them. So that's, again, an indicator of coming from a human source, that water, that sample containing some human source of some kind. So it's not a direct measure of fecal coliform, but it does indicate that water, some of it anyway, came from a house. And so we're going to be doing optical brighteners tests too. And this will be obviously over time and space. And we'll have to also look at some sediments eventually because, as you probably know, sometimes bacteria prefer to be in sediment. That's where the food and the nutrients are certain times of the year. So that's also important, I think, to get that information.
And then test is a level of nitrogen, things like that. Do we test for that?
Yeah.
I know several years ago it spiked, and because everybody was using weed and feed, you know, and so, you know, he's just.
Yes.
Okay.
Next slide, please. And just wanted to provide you with contacts that you can go to. You'll have your reference that will be provided to you shortly here, and just want to make myself available, and I know Janice wants to make herself available to you. And any issues with, you know, where the health district stops and clean water starts or any of that, feel free to give us a call.
Very good. Yeah, this is an excellent presentation.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, back to you, sir.
Last, I just wanted to give you an update of where we are with our TV investigation around Skyview. So we just to remind everyone that we were notified about this case on May 1st, and we've been doing the investigation since. And this person, the exposure period was from actually last July to May 1st. We identified two locations as a possible source of exposure. One was Skyview High School, and the other one was a local work site, and we've notified people who might have been exposed at the local work site, and we're working with them. And so we're working at that local work site to identify the close contacts. We've notified them, and we had done an on-site assessment to see, actually looking at the airflow, where people worked, just to get an idea where there might have been areas where there could have been exposure. And so we're still working on that. At the high school, we identified 305 close contacts, potential close contacts, and we worked with the school, great partnership, to ensure that all the identified contacts were offered testing. We went on site and we screened and tested 175 staff and students. And of this 175 staff and students, two tested positive for infection, which is a pretty, it's not zero, but it's a pretty low number. We're going to be having a second round of screening at the end of this month, because it can take up to 2 months after exposure to develop a positive test, so we wanted to do a second round. And so far we have no, we haven't heard of any additional cases at Skyview. The two cases that were tested positive were infected but don't have active disease. So the germ is in their system. They can be treated to take care of that. We call that latent TB infection. But I also want to point out, after testing over, you know, testing 175 folks with two positives, the risk, even with the folks who might have been exposed, the risk is pretty low. The risk to the general public is extremely, extremely, extremely low. I mean, it virtually nil. Mm-hmm. So we'll, as this progresses, we'll give you more update once we've been through the second round of testing and we complete this. I just wanted to give you an update on that.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Comments from the board? Anything?
So as the Board of Counselors, we are working through implementation of freight rail dependent uses. But I wonder if there would be some benefit in either next month or the month after hearing as the Board of Health kind of what some of the public health impacts of that could be when it comes to one of the decisions is whether or not to allow for sewer to be extended, but also air quality impacts, things like that of the proposal. So if there was something, if the rest of the board was open to that, hearing that in the next couple of months might be beneficial.
Were you, in terms of freight uses, were you talking about, are you talking about trains or
yes.
coal trains
no.
or?
No, it would be light industrial use or potentially industrial uses in the rural area, which may or may not have urban services. So looking at, you know, from a health perspective, what does that mean?
Okay. We'll get back to you on that.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. And the only thing I have you brought up yesterday, but and the counselors, 4th of July, so fireworks, so be responsible. People out there listening, and be courteous. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.